I'm Dana Brown, and I'm a surfer. This film isn't about a lifestyle, it's about life, where style's just an option.
Boy, once you get a sand in between your toes, you can never leave the beach. And once the surfing bug bit you, you get bitten by that, you can never leave.
Surfing is a 2,000-year-old pastime that's become a multi-billion-dollar industry. Still, it's all about the wave.
You know, waves are this kind of unifying force in the universe. There's light waves, sound waves, and ocean waves are the only form in which they're at kind of a human scale. They move at a speed about as fast as we run. They're in this beautiful medium, the ocean.
All it takes is, you know, just one wave, not even that, one turn. You know, just a moment. It keeps pulling you back to have another moment. It never ends.
It's a tribe of people around the world that feed off of that energy.
It's not a part of this world. You're stepping into liquid. You're stepping off of concrete ground and into an element that is always changing and moving and it's surrounding you, and it feels good.
Without question, the best surfers in the world are dolphins. Their zany neighbors, the seals, place a strong second, followed by the perpetually mellow pelicans. Humans in comparison suck because we need boards, wax, wetsuits, we panic easy, and we're always convinced we're just about to drown. But somehow that doesn't stop us, because hell or high water, we're out there. Many of us have nothing in common except this shared passion. But each of us began exactly the same way, with that first wave.
I think I first stood up in about 1947.
And I rode it all the way in, and I went, uh-oh, I'm hooked.
Ran in the house, Mom, you won't believe what I did.
My mom kind of, you know, big deal.
Okay, girls.
With all the moms.
They're young and absolutely fearless. They can take 3 gallons of water up the schnoz and not even blink. Welcome to the mini extreme.
It's really, really fun. Yeah, that's what I like about it.
And you get to hang with your friends a lot. And I like the ocean, so you get to be in it a lot.
It's kind of like you're flying.
Because they scare me. Not too big, like maybe 6 foot.
Waves seem big when you're 4 feet tall. It's still big when you're an adult because it's a better story. And finally, when you're old and alone, it's never big because it's gimungous. However, there are those who don't need to exaggerate. A rare few with the talent and mindset to ride waves that defy description.
Big wave riding is like an inner desire that you have to kind of challenge the sea or try to be in harmony with the sea in its most like dynamic moment.
About 10 years ago, Laird decided to escape the crowds. So with a few friends, he set out to conquer a wave too big, too fast, and too dangerous to ride. a wave that required a new approach to surfing.
At a certain size, it's almost impossible, or actually impossible, to paddle into waves. So they use the tow rope to kind of pull themselves into these giant waves.
Can't catch a freight train on a bicycle. You have to match power with power. Voila, tow surfing is born. Measure Laird by any standard today, he's the greatest living surfer in the world today. I think there's nothing, no one can touch him as far as performance, innovation, imagination, pure athleticism, and just absolutely unquestionable courage.
When Laird drives, Dave Kalama surfs. Dave's a former windsurfing champion, but not nearly as well known as Laird in the surfing world, which has caused some to portray him as Laird's sidekick, which would be a lot like figuring Godzilla is King Kong's second banana.
Dave Kalama and Laird, anything that goes on in the ocean, those two guys figured out before anyone's even interested in most of this stuff. And by the time everybody, you know, starts to notice, they're already really good at it.
While surfing gets the glory, the real hero is whoever's driving the ski. The ski tows the surfer into the wave, and shadows him during the entire ride, always prepared in case of a wipeout. Because with a jagged lava shoreline only a couple hundred yards away, surfing Piahi without the ski would be near suicide.
One of the scariest things about Piahi isn't actually riding it to me, it's watching my friends ride it. You're on the shoulder driving the ski, look at him going, come on, faster, a little, come on. You know, and you're like, you're worried for them because if they eat it, not only are they going to go through a heavy experience, but now I got to go in front of the next wave and try and get them out of it. You've ever seen a dog grab a rag doll and shake it in its teeth where all the limbs are just, you know, going every which way, and that's, you feel like any more pressure and your arm could just get ripped right off your body.
The engine faltered for just an instant, but that's all it takes.
We're on it because we don't want, obviously, anybody to be harmed, and yesterday we lost a ski in the process of trying to rescue somebody, and we figure, you know, you can buy more skis, but you can't buy people, so.
I came out of the barrel, I hit what they call like a phantom chop. My knees and everything kind of just buckled. That's when I said, just, you know, relax, take it on the head, try to get pushed in, get a little bit farther in, wait for the rescue. At that point, I basically experienced the joy of watching Laird and a couple of my other friends, you know, catch probably some of the better waves that I've ever seen.
Looked into your eyes and saw.
What began simply as a way to escape the crowds has redefined the limits of big wave surfing. But for Laird and David, tow-in surfing is only a part of a much bigger picture.
2 foot to 20 foot, the fun's the same for me. All I'm looking for is a smile, and just riding a wave is what does it for me. It's not necessarily the size.
The analogy is music. You can have a jazz musician and a rock musician and, you know, a classical guitarist can all appreciate or understand what that other guy hears, but that's not his trip. And surfing's the same way.
Because of the sort of advanced culture that the Hawaiians had, they got to really be serious about developing recreational time, greater than almost any culture. So surfing was born out of pure recreation, which means it's just purely for fun. There's no standard that gets set like in other sports that you have to meet or else fall behind.
I interviewed Timothy Leary, and his thesis was that the highest destiny of man on earth was to live an aesthetic life based on the dance, and that surfers had discovered this, out there as that was. That helped me realize what it was about surfing that was so worthwhile that it made me feel good about a day that included a go out.
The lifestyle of surfing is unlike any other sport. You know, how many people do you know that go and gaze at a tennis court? You know, think about it, you know. Ooh, I love the surface of that tennis court. They don't do that, you know. I mean, think of any other sport where they go and they look and people just sit and watch waves. And it doesn't matter if it's perfect waves like we have here in Hawaii or the Great Lakes.
Deep in America's heartland, 1,000 miles from any ocean, is the surf city of Lake Michigan, Sheboygan, Wisconsin, a hotbed for freshwater surfers.
We're in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. We're kind of like in the center of Lake Michigan, midway. We're 50 miles north of Milwaukee, and we're 50 miles south of the frozen tundra, Lambeau Field, in Green Bay.
It's a huge amount of water here, and what generates waves is this fetch, or wind travel distance over water. We got lots of fetch here. We get lots of waves.
You got a short window for waves, usually 6 to 8 hours sometimes, and you got to know where to go and be there at the right time and get the waves.
We need low pressure systems that move, and if they're moving in fast, they create wind. And if we've got warm water and 20 mile an hour winds, we've got waves.
Waves are where you find them, you know. There's a lot of argument about where it's best, and, you know, this doesn't match up with California. It's not Malibu. Well,
national contest or anything like that, but I have as much fun as anybody else. I like it as much.
Describing the surf scene in Sheboygan comes down to two words.
The stoke is a global thing. I don't think you can measure the stoke in regions of bodies of water.
He's been silent in this lake since 1956. He's the most stoked person I've ever met.
We've got a tight-knit group of guys, maybe a dozen guys. We've all kind of grown up together, and as kids hung out at the beach, and some of the guys went off to college, some went off to Vietnam, whatever. But guys came back and married and raised families. And we surfed through all of this. We hit the water, we hoot and holler for each other, we surf for 4 or 5 hours. Somebody will crack open a 12-pack of beer and we'll just lie about the good rides we had, you know?
Surfers are honest people, except about surfing, which is why every surf town has a secret spot that has the best waves on the planet.
It's legendary here on the Great Lakes. And on a good soft day, it breaks just like Banzai Pipeline, North Shore of Oahu. We get barrels so big, it'll hide a Volkswagen.
Huh. pipeline would not only hide a Volkswagen, it would probably stick it right next to Jimmy Hoffa. One of the most violent waves on the planet. But when it's on, it produces one tremendous tube after another. No one has ever ridden this place better, with more grace or guts, than Mr. Pipeline, Jerry Lopez.
The waves out here, there's none like them anywhere in the world, and I mean, talk about a challenge for a lifetime.
There's no place like Pipeline where you can drive up, park your car, walk down the beach, sit there, 50 yards away, watch the best surfers in the world get in the tube. So I think the uniqueness of the wave and the accessibility of the wave, and it's been the quintessential wave by which all of the waves are judged. When it's on and the surfer's on, there's no better show on earth.
It's big, it's powerful, it's exciting, it's really dangerous. And you can feel that from the beach, because you can literally feel the waves on the beach.
There's waves out here that are not meant to be ridden. They're just going to roll through and roll up everything that's in their way.
At Pipe, it's not if, it's when. If you're a pipe surfer, you're going to get hurt, you know. It's a fact. And you just pray that you get injuries that can be fixed.
Soldiers are weary from the battles they wage, in a war without a conscience in the catch of the grave. I ain't here to say the truth about the cause. Prince of Wars, a list of all men that we will benefit, not from the screams or the broken down dreams, the heresy of reason that trickles downstream. Where will we go, where will we find? In this time of black hypocrisy that leaves a trail of bullshit behind. Carpe diem, here we go again, carpe diem.
Nothing ventured, nothing gained, sees the moment, sees the day.
One step in for greatness, one step in for greatness.
Nothing ventured, nothing gained, sees the moment, sees the day.
One step in for greatness, yeah. One step in for greatness.
You know, you're thinking, I'm going to die. Most times you don't. I mean, guys have died here. But it's so scary at that moment that, I don't know, maybe you die a little.
Why take the risk? Maybe it's for those moments when the possible is conquered. And there's that satisfied joy that connects the present with someone long forgotten. A familiar face. Meet your inner child. He's a great kid, but not exactly the guy your boss hired.
I think the legitimate criticism to be made of surfers that when they're in the water, they're not being productive.
Surfers often can't escape the stereotype of being a beach bum. Their entire lives, they have to explain themselves.
When you talk about surfing, the more you say, the worse off you are. It's something that is very personal, and it ends up sounding a little silly.
There's one particular surfer who's turned silly into something downright heroic.
And I was working at this chicken, refried chicken place, and my job was to strain the oil. So confused at which way to turn the knobs and not to make a mess. I would have happily left after 5 minutes. To have lasted 8 hours there was the longest 8 hours I've ever experienced.
Dale Webster does not like wasting time. With mind-boggling dedication, he's committed to a goal so simple it would seem impossible.
Today was 9,182 consecutive days, a little over 25 years. I'm trying to surf to the year 2004, and by then I'll be up to 10,407 consecutive days. If I can reach that goal, you can tell that dreams can come true.
Every day, rain or shine or tonsillitis, Dale's out there, mano a mano with the calendar.
In February 1976, there were 5 Sundays in a row, and I saw that won't happen again until the year 2004. So there was the challenge to surf every day until February has that extra Sunday again.
He's kept everything on his pursuit.
It started out as a streak, went into a quest, and now it's some sort of a mission. I don't really know what the mission is, but the only worthwhile thing in life is to ride it to the end, try to find out the meaning of it all. I wouldn't recommend it to anyone. Your family should come first. Fortunately, my family knows that this is the best thing for me, is to keep doing this as long as I can.
Margot Webster has never missed a single day of school in her entire life. She has a unique understanding of her father's quest.
Well, it's just so much of a part of his life that it's what keeps him going.
He gets to the beach as the night clouds move away.
I try to catch at least 3 waves a day. Some days the waves are so big and blown out and tricky that getting 3 waves takes almost 3 hours.
When Dale turns and bows to the wave, he's giving thanks. It's an ancient Hawaiian tradition.
What I was trying to do was not surfing against anyone else, but surfing against myself, because surfing is the ultimate spontaneous involvement in a natural medium.
I'm very proud of what he does. I truly don't think he'll be able to stop surfing every day, because after he's gotten that far, I'm pretty sure he'll just be like, okay, well, I can surf for 30 years in a row, or I can surf longer.
I come out of the water in a much different, better mood than I do when I get into the water. And if that somehow translates into my life and I end up being a happier, nicer person as a result, then I guess you could argue that surfing is good for society.
A society is made up of individuals. So is surfing. Many surfers search for that perfect wave, and to each one, it means something different.
And the waves are kind of they're the central pursuit, but in the long run, they're just this kind of small cherry on top of this much bigger cake.
They come from Ojai, California, a cross between the James Gang and the Marx Brothers. They're the Malloys. Chris is the eldest and the trailblazer. In the middle is Keith, the quiet one. Finally, the youngest and biggest, Danny. They're unique individuals who share deep respect for their Irish ancestry.
We did come from a certain place, and only 100 years ago, you know, my grandmother was on a boat.
If she didn't sail, we'd probably be, you know, in the field right now, you know, herding sheep or something like that. So I think every single time, you know, we're suiting up and we're freezing and we're looking around, you kind of get a taste of what our ancestors went through on a daily basis.
They're good boys, you know. Malloys are really, they're good people. There's honestly not a bad bone in their body.
We go, yeah, we're Irish. And they just, like, start laughing, you know. Like, it doesn't matter if you're 100%, you know, Irish. If you're from America, you're American.
I mean, you're coming here, you know, to drink a Guinness, to you know, put on warm clothes and beanies and you know, full suits and booties and sit it out. And, you know, I mean, personally, it's awesome to be in this gnarly weather, and a rainstorm to me is fun, you know.
I had a lady come up, and I'm pretty sure that she'd never seen surfing before in her life, maybe in pictures, and she was amazed, and it was cool that she appreciated it, because she came up and she was with her family and was so excited about it and was telling us, you know, she'd never seen something like that and that we made it look easy. And
because to them it's just this cold, dark thing, you know, and they're like, oh, so you're going in today, are you? And they kind of just want to see it. They don't really believe you're going to do it, you know, and they see you in this weird rubber suit, you know.
They can't believe, like, that you're going out to do it for fun.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm the first one in my family to surf, yeah, which kind of pisses off my dad, because he used to be always swimming, you know, so he's kind of a bit pissed off that surfing wasn't in Ireland like 40 years ago.
You know, when you say, oh, I was in Ireland surfing, they smirk and they go, oh, really, you got to catch a couple waves over there, and they don't realize that waves are perfect. I mean, it doesn't happen that often, and you really gotta wait for it, but when it happens, it happens.
I can only speculate about living in the dark. I would rather shiver in a little light from a spark.
Hollow waves break over a shallow rock bottom. This spot's called Tampa, fittingly named after a local insurance company. The nastiest wave they found was a place called Mullig Mullah, but it turned out to be perfect to introduce towing surfing to Donegal County. These people had never seen anything quite like this. Ireland gets surf as good as Indonesia, Tahiti, or Australia, just not as often. Which works out well because it takes at least 3 days to regain feeling in your feet.
Keith got out of the water. We've been surfing for like 2.5 hours, and he goes, "I'm not very calm." He couldn't even move his lips. You know, his lips were completely numb.
Doesn't matter who you are. Like, you come to Ireland, and you know, you just open up to the people and talk to them. They're stoked. They just want to make conversation. It's the crack. The crack is the good time. Having the good time is the crack.
Coming on back to you.
One of the few rare things in the world surfing is that can bring people together. No matter what race, creed or colour, we're all under the one sky, united we stand, you know, we share the weather, and that's our band together. We are the surfing tribe.
We're very close to the border with Northern Ireland, which is technically a different country. So in Northern Ireland, there's quite a divide between two communities. You've got Protestants and Catholics. So what my brother does, he brings Protestant children from a school in Northern Ireland down to Bundoran, and the school here is obviously predominantly Catholic children, so they use a medium like surfing to bring them together and let them bond.
Even though it's 15 miles north, most of them have never even been to this part of Ireland, and together, once they all got in the water, there was absolutely no separation between them. They were just all laughing and screaming and playing and cheering for each other, and it was like, I mean, I think, I don't know if it hit us harder or them, you know, what was actually going on, but it was beautiful.
You know, he caught a wave and he turned around, he goes, "That's the best thing I've done, you know, all year," and he was just pumped up, so excited, and, you know, his hair was wet and there's snot coming out of his nose, and, you know, he's beside a little Catholic kid from town here, so it was very, very good. It was a good buzz to see him, you know.
One of the kids got on the beach and he looked at me, and he was really quiet, but he got a really good ride. And he looked at me and said, "So, how much do these surfing boards cost anyway?" And I could tell, you know, I knew he was hooked. He was hooked. I guarantee next year when we come back, he'll have his own board.
Well, I didn't really know what it was going to be like today, but whenever I came along and I seen the big waves, I just wanted to get out there and surf. And whenever I got out there, I got up once, and that was wicked.
Saying I had never surfed before. I'd like to try it again, so...
It looks hard on the TV, but, like, it's easy enough.
You can take yourself and just go out there and do your best.
Recommend it to anybody who wants to come surfing.
Then later on, we got up on the beach and we're talking to some of the local guys who were like, "That was actually really heavy, you know. A lot of these kids have never been down in this part of Ireland, you know. They're Protestants and they were surfing with the Catholic kids, and and the local guys that were watching it all, you know, it was a pretty big deal, and it was, you know, it was fun to be a part of, and for us it was easy and we had a blast.
In Hollywood, a happy ending for a surf movie has the hero leaving the beach because he's wised up to the importance of hard shoes. Sometimes the crazed fool decides to go for one last kick and drowns like a rat. Somehow this subtle message of get out of the water and put on your shoes has been totally lost on real surfers. Their names are legendary in surfing, with a combined wave riding experience of over 150 years, because real surfers never quit. Every year they come to Costa Rica to stay at the vacation home of Robert August. Robert's a true believer in that what goes around, comes around.
In Hawaii they have the Aloha spirit. Costa Rica they have the Pura Vida spirit, you know, pure life. You know, we're only on this planet a little while. Don't mess with it, you know, enjoy it and spread a little cheer and then you're gone.
Robert was 18 when he rode the perfect wave in the middle of summer. Amazingly, he seems to have never stopped.
Those are the guys that make surfing what it is. And, you know, you've got Robert, who comes from a surfing family. His father was a great surfer. He has a great heritage, and he's passed that heritage and that stoke onto his son. And then, you know, Robert's passed it on to his son. And the family tradition of what it represents carries on.
If you have surfed for any period of time, it's just, it can't go out of your mind. And there's still that same excitement when you paddle out, because every wave you catch is going to be different. And you might be in the spot for the best wave of the day, whether you're really smart or not. You could just luckily be sitting there and look up and go, my God, it's coming to me. It's my wave.
What they lose up top is gained in the middle, but the talent remains. The perfect example, former U.S. champion Mark Martinson.
First wave, Mark caught me, pulls into the tube and travels about 15 feet right in front of me. I'm thinking, hey, man, he's 55 years old or something, you know? I can't do that.
It's always surprising when an apparent suicide attempt turns into a great wave. That experience.
And the whole environment is so alluring, and it's one of, you know, offering great peace and happiness and giggles and a wonderful memory that you come away with. That, to me, that's the perfect wave.
Paul Strauss' style set a standard for a generation. Jerry Lopez still calls him his idol. They're living out their childhood dreams, surfing, having fun.
Even though it's like 40 years ago, you can still paddle out together and go surfing. You know, you can't go play football with each other when you're our age. You know, you'd all be in the hospital the next day, you know, cats and stuff.
They won't break any bones, but they will take a few shots.
Surfing is a selfish sport. It's about you getting a really good wave. Screw the other guy. The same thing. Hang out with old guys. You're gonna look good.
Robert Weaver, Wingnut, the nickname says it all. His nonstop repartee masks a deep-seated admiration for Robert, Paul, and Mark. They were his idols as a kid, and the reason he's a surfer. It's their inspiration that has allowed Wingnut to fulfill another need, to constantly be the center of attention. He casually charged from one adventure to another with a zen-like confidence that no matter what happens, they're going to enjoy themselves.
It's not the result of when you get there, it's anything that can happen along the way.
They take nothing for granted, and they never forget how lucky they are. For them, these are the good old days.
The first 20 years is just to figure out if you're really interested or not. You know, and then the journey doesn't really begin until on the second 20.
For those who started surfing in the 50s, surfing has changed. The rebellious subculture has become mainstream.
You know, when I started to surf, there was maybe 1,000 surfers, and you kind of like semi-almost knew all the guys that surfed. And then in 1959, that whole thing happened where the movie Gidget came out, and the whole thing got commodified, and it went from maybe 2,000 people to 4 million people in 3 or 4 years. It was like a hula hoop that never went away.
And neither has Gidget. Kathy Koner was given that nickname back in the 50s when she surfed Malibu. She was just a teenager and one of the very few women surfing at the time. Her father was inspired to write a novel about her adventures, and Hollywood soon followed. Pop culture has been mixed up with surfing ever since. Gidget still lives near Malibu, and over the last 10 years has seen an explosion in women surfing. It's no longer an insult to surf like a girl.
I always surfed like a girl. That was just me. I don't know if it's my personality. I don't know if it's my influences. You know, each person can kind of bring their own special, you know, flair to it.
These girls are really good. This ride alone represents my entire lifetime of hanging five. This kind of talent can wreak havoc on the old male ego.
Sometimes the guys get kind of aggro, but those are the kind of people that, like, are just mad at the world anyway, I think. And they're going to find a problem with whoever's out there, and especially when a bunch of girls show up, and they probably surf better than them.
I love being with my friends, and I love being with family, and fortunately for me, you know, most of my friends and family do surf, and those are some of the best times I've ever spent.
You're done. Once you're a surfer, you're done. You're in. You know? It's like the mob or something. You're not getting out.
Humor, more than anything, defines a surfer. Talent's fine, but funny's a lot better. Those that are too serious are treated like Hare Krishnas at the airport. Because after all, why surf if you're not having fun? And by keeping it light, the heavy can be handled.
Everyone is on the same page. We all enjoy the pure fact of riding waves and being in the ocean. No matter how you're doing it, if it's on your stomach, you know, it's just the pure love of the ocean.
Oh yeah, if I'm lying down, I'm gonna be surfing. I'm standing up surfing, halfway standing up, kneeling down, I don't even care. As long as I get in the water and surf, it's gonna go down.
It's about, you know, showing other people of how you can collaborate with somebody else, even though they're in a position the way Jesse's in. He's still willing to, like, hey, you know, you like to surf, you know, just the way if he was walking, let's continue to do this. You know, he's a Pisces, he's a fish, he's supposed to be in the water. So that just tells everybody else, hey, you know, if he's surfing and wow, you know, he might be paralyzed, but hey, that gives me inspiration. Let's go out there and do it. You know, I was always into basketball and, you know, other sports, but surfing now, the way I look at it, it's a whole different way. It's more of a spiritual.
I have a lot of burning sensation, pain in my body, but once I hit the water, I have no pain whatsoever. If I'm tight, my limbs are, like, you know, tight. As soon as I hit the water, get out of the water, everything's loose. I got a smile from ear to ear, and it's like nothing could compare to that.
To be such a top prospect as an amateur, to be just, like, destined to become a professional surfer, and to have such a tragic accident happen to him.
I broke my neck surfing about 5 years ago. Just pulled into a barrel, and when I was coming out, the wave hit me in my back, and I went head first and didn't have time to put my arms in front of me, and just hit the bottom, and whole body went numb and tingly.
It's so hard for me to think that there's just, like, that nerve is just, it's broken. It's just one little nerve that's broken right there, and then that's the whole thing that connects. I don't think I do so well, you know.
Jesse called me up because he was having a golf tournament to raise money for his foundation, and he also wanted to talk to me about getting back in the water.
Rob Path, famous surf star, he's, like, as a human being that no one really knows about, is just so special. I mean, he's got the biggest heart. You know, I mean I was honored, and at the same time really kind of scared. I was like, we're going. I'm not nervous as long as I got you guys. We're fine. But they were all sketched and scared, and there's no need.
It was crazy. The first day we took him surfing was just a complete unknown. We did it.
This was just the beginning. Soon, Jesse and Rob surfed at every opportunity. And with the help of Jesse's brother Josh, his nurse Sonny, and support from old friends like the Malloy brothers, Jesse is back, and he's charging.
For him, nothing's changed. He wants to take off deep. He wants to stay out as long as he can. I asked him, I go, would you rather have it be big and stormy or like this and nice and glassy? And he's all bigger.
And regarding about surfing with Rob, since he's a goofy foot, he's been really biased about me taking off on rights. You're not going to convert me to a goofy footer just because you are.
Hey, he's a goofy foot too.
Hey, I'm not goofy.
So am I.
He's surrounded by goofy
foot. I'm the only dragon.
Cooties, goofy cooties.
Thank you that I have Jesse and that I have what I have and everything I have. My friends, my family. Yeah.
Every time he surfs, he calls us up and he's like, hey, Rob took me to surfing, man. That guy rules.
If there's anybody who knows about ruling, it's Kelly Slater, the Michael Jordan of surfing. While millions worldwide think of him as a champion, a hero, in his home country of the U.S., he represents one thing, a surfer.
Surfing in the United States is really unfairly stereotyped. I think fast times at Ridgemont High and the whole concept of, hey, dude, It really portrayed surfing in a bad way.
I mean, you can turn on SportsCenter on ESPN, and I don't think I've ever seen a surfer on SportsCenter on ESPN, to be honest. Yeah, you turn on, you know, Channel 9 News in Australia, whoever's won the latest tournament in tennis or golf, surfing's right there with it.
In Australia, surfing is like a national pastime. Everybody knows Kelly Slater, and everybody knows the future.
I'm just, you know, I'm hungry for results and hungry for a world title and all the rest of it.
Taj makes his living at the highest level of surfing competition, the World Cup Tour. He's among an elite 44 who battle 9 months in 8 countries for the World Championship. Taj qualified for the World Tour when he was 15 years old. He decided to finish high school instead. He became Rookie of the Year, and the following season was runner-up for the World Championship.
Oh, I think Taj Burrows today is the epitome of modern surfing.
Taj Burrow, to me, is one of the best surfers in the world. To me, he looks like the kind of guy that you draw in your comic book hero, like surfer guy.
It's actually surprised me that Taj hasn't won a world title yet. He's such a talented surfer.
He's the perfect example of that future of pro surfing.
Many think he has the potential to be more than a future champion, the future of the sport, the next step in surfing's evolution. National hero, but definitely low maintenance. His posse consists of a dog named Reef. Maybe this is normal for an Aussie phenom named after an American blues singer with a one-mutt posse from Yalinga.
This is just perfect because it's really quiet, and the waves are really good, and it's not so crowded, and it's just a lot more relaxing lifestyle than just packing your bags and checking in the flights and checking in the hotels and stuff like that. So I think it's just the perfect balance.
Taj was born in Australia, but his parents are both American. They came here in 1970 looking for waves and never left.
I took him surfing, you know, when he was one or two, just on the nose of my board, and rode a few waves with him like that.
That's really good, yeah.
But he didn't pick it up himself until he was about 7.
My dad tells everybody he taught me to surf. No, my parents both surf, so it was pretty much inevitable I'd end up surfing.
It's kind of disappointing that I wanted to sort of teach him more about surfing, but he picked it up so quickly I didn't get much of the pleasure of passing on my knowledge. I was like, please.
Taj makes everything look easy, maybe too easy. The best surfer doesn't always win.
Pro Tours has gotten better and better. They are addressing more of the creative approach to surfing a wave, which is great, because Taj is quite creative.
Creativity is one of the most magical things about surfing, and also one of the most difficult to judge.
It's going to take a long time for us to really catch up to speed with Taj's level. It's going to take a while for the judges to comprehend what he's doing, because he is truly somebody that doesn't really compare to anybody else as far as how many maneuvers he packs in a wave, how innovative he is when he launches airs.
Taj, by any measure, is a great success. At 23, he's already been inducted into Australia's Surfing Hall of Fame. Still, without the world title, he's not satisfied. The expectation of becoming the next Kelly Slater has turned that little monkey on his back into a 500-pound gorilla.
You want to compare Taj and Kelly, there's only one huge difference. Kelly's won 6 world titles and Taj has won none.
To compare great surfers is like comparing artists. Who's to say which one's more aesthetically pleasing? The cut and dry has no place in liquid. Life is a matter of perception. A 20-foot tube may be the perfect wave to one person. To me, it's a watery grave. But perceptions change. Mine did in Tahiti. When it came to the world of professional women surfers, I always thought they had a big chip on their shoulder. Turns out I was dead wrong.
Even when I've just come off the tour, I've been traveling from ocean to ocean, beach to beach for the last 3 months. The first thing I want to do when I get home is go back to the beach. And that's the life of a pro surfer.
It's a pleasure to go beyond one dimension and being in a court and having lines and being able to come into a rhythm with the ocean, not just whoever you're surfing against. It's never a bit about who you're surfing against, even though you want to beat him.
I'd say the best surfer in the world is the one having the most fun.
Oh, endlessly, on the endlessly.
I notice a real difference in the water when I'm surfing with guys as opposed to women, because the water's more filled with estrogen as opposed to testosterone, because the girls just love to have fun. We can laugh at ourselves.
That was my biggest surprise. These girls knew all about having fun. Remember that classic tomboy who lived down the street and could beat you at all the sports, and then she grew up and was a beautiful woman and could still beat you at all the sports? Meet Lane Beachley, 5-time world champion. Then there's Rochelle Ballard. She stands 5'1" on land, but somehow seems to expand to 8'6" in the water. The premier woman surfer in big waves is Keala Kinley. She also has the unbelievable knack of being able to recite Caddyshack line by line. Rochelle, Lane, and Keala are overqualified to be considered one of the boys. So in the interest of fair play, I decided I'd become one of the girls. It took me a while to explain myself to the crew.
Surfing for the last 100 years has been completely wrong. Where women were looked down on if they wanted to surf. Women weren't welcomed into the club. Where in the original essence of surfing, they were part of the club. So you got to hand it to those women who have persevered in the pro scene, you know, especially, you know, women like, you know, Keala and Rochelle and Lane, who have actually made inroads into the big wave scene, which is, you know, a testosterone pit if there ever was one. The sacrifices they made, it's paying off for the generation that's coming up behind them.
J'aimerais bien, mais peut-être pas aller surfer, il faut avoir une bonne condition physique, que c'est pas une vague facile, et vraiment avoir de l'expérience, et peut-être après.
Shallow and razor sharp, this coral reef creates one of the most powerful waves on the planet. Legendary for its reward and its punishment. Lane Beachley almost drowned here, Keala Kinley too. But they've come back to Chopu, which in Tahitian means the end of the road.
Like, even if you're scared, it just looks so nice that you just want to go.
Even professional surfers, they come over here, I can see fear on their face, which is understandable, because it's a really heavy wave.
It's the only wave that has teeth.
tell me where you'll be. You should have been here yesterday when tomorrow was today.
Ride for a surfer is to get deep inside the breaking section of a wave. The deeper, the better. This is called being locked in the tube or riding the barrel. Kiala Kinley spent so much time in the barrel, she was like a clown at the rodeo.
Men don't do what they do, and wow, take my hat off.
I hope one day my daughter can surf like that.
It's like falling in love. You know, you don't know what the feeling is until you felt it, and that's what being able to face a challenge and to live a dream and to feel the energy and to experience the beauty and to get spat out in glory.
Thanks to Lane, Rochelle, and Kiala, it's official. Tahiti is surfing paradise. But of course, paradise is actually a state of mind. You might be somewhere where there isn't a decent wave for 100 miles, and all you need is a little imagination and a super tanker. It begins where the Atlantic Ocean ends. 15 miles wide and 30 miles long, super tankers make this trip from Galveston to Houston, which in Texas means surf's up.
We're chasing super tankers. I guess you'd call it super tanker surfing.
When I was a young kid, we used to ride shipways. We called it shipways, all about 5 miles from here over on the shore. And a couple of years back, a couple of us went out and started following the ships and noticing some great places to go surfing.
Nobody knows where we are. We'll go to the beach, everybody knows where we are. But out here, we're on our own, and every time, there's good stories to tell.
There's a lot of variables. It has to be low tide, a little bit of wind. It's nice to have a tanker all by itself, full speed ahead, about 13 knots. The wave just comes out of deep water and just drags along in the shoal. It's a difficult wave to ride, but it goes forever. I think you could probably ride one for 2 or 3 miles. No bullshit.
In the wake of a super tanker for 2 or 3 miles, you better put aside a good portion of the afternoon.
You know, you're talking about like riding for 2 or 3 minutes at a time. It's just a whole different sport. Particularly here in Texas, the rides are really short, so you're used to, you know, 2 or 3 second rides. You know, the first 20 or 30 seconds, you're just blown away, and then you're just like, man, my legs are kind of starting to hurt here. It's just fun just standing there. You could eat a sandwich on it and you still enjoy it.
Miss a wave, we'll go pick the guys up, motor out in front of the wave, and drop them back off again because it just keeps breaking.
It'll be a set of five, maybe up to 8 waves that are real close together. So fortunately, right after it, like about 8 feet behind it, there'll be another wave, and you just keep on catching them until they all make it out of the shoal area and just play out all together, and you got to wait on another tanker.
There's a lot of characters in surfing, and these Texans are on the top of the list. But they can't hold a candle to those wackos from Santa Cruz. They call these frigid, shark-infested waters their playground. They're a group of lifelong friends, famous in the water for their big wave ability, and infamous on land for being slightly unhinged. Collectively, they're called the Mavericks crew.
I think the Mavericks crew, in general, is one of the most
messed up group of freaking wild men. I just, they're nuts.
It's funny, Santa Cruz has kind of been a nickname, kind of a ground, you know. I don't think you're cool unless you have one. The nicknames come from, like, who they are. Barney's a Barney. Flea, he's just a little guy, and, you know, he drops in on huge waves. There's Flea. Skinny, he was always a skinny cat. And, you know, unfortunately, he kind of grew up, and he's big now, but that's what happens. Nicknames, if they stick, you're done. It wasn't something I enjoyed, being called the Condor.
My mom didn't want me to be a surfer. She's like, nah, these surfers are slackers, dope smoking losers. You're not going to be one of those. And they try to get me into sports and stuff. And so I was always doing it behind their back. So I was sneaking out. I had a board at my friend's house and stuff. I kept my board and wetsuit at a friend's house. And I'd come home from the beach all day, and I'd be all sunburnt and salty. She'd taste my skin and go, you're grounded.
My father runs a surf shop here in town. Has been in a, basically grew up in a surf shop factory shaping room. So I pretty much had surfing in my blood since the moment I was crawling.
At this point in my life, he's my best friend.
It helps, you know, that's the main thing for especially what we're doing as a partnership, to have that kind of security.
The Mavericks crew has a reputation as the best big wave paddle-in surfers in the world. So it came as a surprise to many, including themselves, when they decided to take up tow-in surfing.
Pete had a ski, and he said, hey, let's do this, want to do this? I'm like, all right.
We didn't know. And now I realize it's good stuff.
Surfing, the Mavericks crew looks to Maui and the Strap crew for ideas and guidance.
Everything that we've done, you know, to lead up to it, we've kind of taken from them, bits and pieces, and they're legends, straight up.
The Mavericks crew and the Strap crew knew each other, but because of the 2,500 miles of ocean between them, they never really had an opportunity to surf together. That was about to change.
I don't think the Mavericks guys are going to have a lot of problems coming over here other than adjusting to warm water and not having to wear wetsuits.
Our biggest problem is going to be that we're going to be really white and we're going to get sunburned.
Regardless of their skin color, these two groups had a lot in common.
I would say, kind of like our group, they have every personality defect in the book in their group as well. Perfect.
I appreciate their sick humor.
They're a lot smaller than I thought. Theirs only like 5'5 or something like that. I thought it was like 6'2.
Eight of the world's best big wave surfers together again for the first time.
The type of conditions that we're capable of experiencing at this break, you know, this is the windiest spot on Earth.
Just take this cowboy, it's the one you get to be. I love you crying at the altar.
Tow surfing has made the once impossible rideable. But even that has its limits. A tow board in winds like this is almost impossible to ride.
Well, that's the beauty of living on Maui, is it's windy so often that if you don't learn to take advantage of the wind, you're going to be a real sourpuss of a surfer, because it's not that good over here very often. And that's part of being here, is being creative, trying to come up with ways to use the wind to incorporate surfing, but take advantage of the wind also, and the foil boards that we're riding are one way to take advantage of it.
At first glance, the foil board looks like it's some kind of practical joke, but Laird assured us that the hydrofoil fin makes the board glide above the water. I figured he meant it felt like it was gliding above the water.
In the shelter of your mind.
Even though you see it, you can hardly believe it. Their feet strapped in snowboard boots, 2 feet above the water, the wind hardly affecting them at all.
The history of the blowboards from our group was Grant Mickle grabbing this thing called an air chair, bringing it back to Maui, and you sit down on it. And we all went out and tried it, and it was fun. And, you know, and of course, Laird had to take it to the next step, so he sawed the seat off the thing and figured out how to stand on it. And then, like everything, once you see that something's possible, then somebody else has to try it, and away it goes. There's thousands and thousands of surfboard shapers, and there's like one guy making this thing that you can sit on, and he doesn't even know we're standing on him yet.
Laird and David spend as much time in each other's garage refining the foil board's design as they do riding it. They're an interesting cross between surf gods and hobby geeks.
Itself actually uses the energy of the wave under the water, touching a deeper source of the wave.
It's got a real cushiony, soft feeling, almost like you're surfing on a cloud.
A magic carpet ride on a board that can ride both a ripple and the biggest of waves. The foil board's ability to catch a wave early and cut through the heaviest wind chop gives it the potential to ride a wave over 100 feet tall.
I think when actually Laird went to school at this place, they tore it down. It's old now, but I think this is where they came up with the idea for the Hydra foil. It's pretty cool, you know. See, they figured out it's better to use it in the water, though.
They stand on the edge of a new frontier, sharing a common pursuit of happiness. A pursuit that can bond a father with a son and have the future pushed by the past. Jim and Alex Nost have gone on many surf trips together, but none of them quite like this.
I had no choice but to go over into a war and into a war-torn country.
Jim couldn't believe he was back. It's been a long time.
In the service, I was a salvage diver, hard hat salvage diver. So I got an opportunity to see a lot of beautiful beaches and ride through some swells. And it was always my thought, of course, that these swells had to be landing somewhere.
It was those swells that brought Jim back to Vietnam. With him, his son Alex. They were there for some adventure, fun, and surf. Being a communist country, Vietnam has millions of laws, except on the roadway. An 800-mile white-knuckle journey for surf.
These guys looking at the surfboards going, what the hell are those guys doing?
We looked everywhere for waves, out in the country, near cities, even once next to a leper colony, which was the only time we were happy there was no surf. The rest of the time, the perfection mocked us. The beaches were dazzling, but the South China Sea was a lake.
If there's no surf, Alex begins to twitch a little bit, you know, but that's okay. He's not used to spending that much time out of the water.
Jim and Alex started sand surfing, and if you're going to surf sand, you might as well surf big sand. So they headed up the coast, hoping to find that perfect dune. Without hesitation, Alex jumped into the first ride of the day. The wipeout seemed over. And then he looked behind him. Jim thought it looked easy and ended up with a 20 grit enema. This kid was the big kahuna of the dunes, and he showed the Nost how to really ride the sand. The kid was so stoked on the board, he made Jim and Alex follow him back to his village so he could show his pals. This kid had a lot of pals. And they were all stoked on the board, hundreds of them. Alex could hardly move and tried to take sanctuary in the water. That didn't really help matters much. It didn't really matter that they were riding ripples. The joint went ballistic, Every time they stood up, the kids went into a full frothing frenzy.
What can you say? How can you deny them? It reminds me of the first time I went surfing.
Jim was using the standing start, which is a fairly cool method. Alex, meanwhile, found a salad bowl and challenged the croutons in it to a race. Croutons got his board, he got their bowl. The four of the board were a well-oiled machine. Alex was the Titanic. Jim's students were fed up, and it turned into a full mutiny. With all their newfound friends following him, chanting Cowabunga, Jim and Alex set out for one final stop. It was the last place Jim had surfed in Vietnam, Da Nang. They still had hope, especially when they found out that Da Nang had a surf club.
Club from 1992, and so we have over 10 surfers.
Over 10 surfers?
Yeah, over 10 surfers.
Over 10 out of a population of nearly 80 million. Numbers don't matter when you're stoked.
I have got a free time, and I must go to the sea and fly surfing.
The Da Nang Surf Club is also the national swim team. They request that every guest sign their register. With Jim and Alex's signature, their 10-year total of visitors reached 24. At the end of the day, Jim gave the club his surfboard. He'd done a similar thing in 1972 when his military tour ended. Two surfboards 30 years apart, both left in Da Nang. One given by a young soldier, the other by a father and his son. It's the kind of thing that makes a surf trip worthwhile. There comes a time in every surfer's life when he realizes he's always going to be a surfer, forever. It's no longer what he does, it's who he is. It's part of his inner compass. Laird, David, Pete, and Skinny have a compass, but only the four of them can read it. Their Maui meeting can somehow become a trip to the Earth's belly button, Rapa Nui. 3,000 miles off the coast of Chile, a friendly place, but also remote and mysterious.
To describe the energy that you feel here is like to try to describe a color in words. You know, unless you've seen it, it's hard to explain. But the power and of the land and the power of the people that still have survived on this most remote island in the world.
I mean, it's rugged and raw, but it's one of the more pure places in the world that it hasn't been spoiled by the Western civilization. You know, so you come here and, you know, it's just warmth.
We're in such a remote location, and to see somebody surfing, to see the smiles on their face, giggling and laughing, those pure moments that surfing has to offer that aren't as common as they used to be, really are what make the whole thing special.
You know, you take a small little island like this, doing a lot of inbreeding, there'd be some goofy, ugly people. No way, man. Some of the most beautiful people I've ever seen in the world, inside and out.
Rapa Nui is a very special place. You can actually feel it. In the morning, when they'd awake, they'd find gifts left on their front door, anonymous signs of appreciation. They'd become instant folk heroes, and with their respect for the island and the natives, it was a mutual admiration society.
Never, never, never coming home.
They seemed to feed off each other's energy. The boys were non-stop action, a circus of perpetual motion with Skin Dog, the ringmaster.
They gave me a hard time for being all tanner, you know, you're not buff, dude. Not tan. You need to get in the buff, bronze, and bitching club, buddy, and all that shit. Like, come on.
You see one guy do something really stupid, then try and do something even more stupid.
Make it happen and make it fun. And that's what surfing's about, is having fun.
There was something different about Peter's hair.
Feel the love here. You feel it? You feeling it? I'm feeling it.
Laird, David, Pete, and Skinny had become fast friends, but the time had come for them to go back to their respective homes.
Life is interesting in the sense of that no matter where you go in life, you always meet people that you'll relate to from different tribe, different language, different country. And when you have something as, you know, incredible as the ocean to relate to, you get to have some brothers that you haven't known but you get to meet for the first time, and that's a feeling that's a life, you know, that's your life.
On Rapa Nui, the statues are called moi. How they got there, who built them, is a mystery. A lot like surfers, we're always looking for that better wave just past the horizon, somehow believing that at that moment, that perfect wave may appear.
How many good surf spots people have found in a lot of places, you know, I'd been looking, figuring, well, there's no surf there. Next thing you know, there's some great surf, you know, so you got to be there on the right day, right time of the year, et cetera, et cetera.
To find it, be patient. It's nature's schedule, not yours. Surf forecaster Sean Collins knows this. He's had his eye in one place for a decade.
Cortez Bank is probably one of the most fragile areas you could possibly imagine because it is so open to so many, you know, so many other swells and so open to the wind. I mean, we only have maybe 5 days out there where the wind's really under 10 knots. So we, you know, maybe 5 days a year that's even surfable. And then trying to get one of those 5 days to have, you know, 60-foot waves, well, it's, you know, it's, your odds are pretty much against you. That's why we waited 10 years before we were able to get it.
A once-in-a-lifetime deal, because I've been out there in boats quite a few times, and I've never, you know, never seen it. Even I've seen gnarly looking white water and, you know, backwash and white sharks and all that stuff, but never, you know, a wave I think you could ride.
The wave there is made by a seamount, they call it, and it's just a mountain in the ocean at the end of the continental shelf. So you've got open ocean swells, and it's just 5,000 feet. It just goes straight down.
We met them down in San Diego at about 5 p.m. We loaded up the boat, got everything on there.
It was like, God, hope somebody doesn't get hurt. Hope somebody doesn't die. And
we met the captain. The captain's kind of a funny guy. He's a young guy. He's like 22.
He skated up, and I thought he was some deckhand. He's like, hey, what's up, man? I'm your captain. We're taking you out to Cortez. I'm like, you? Kid? Oh, man.
I'm like, right on. Let's do this, you know? For us, this is you know, an adventure, you know, a rocket ride to the moon.
I'd never been out that far. I was kind of scared to go driving a boat out of a 20-foot seas in the middle of the night.
Trugged along for 12 hours. We had a few engine problems in the middle of the night. We were all bummed, thinking we weren't even going to get there. We got out there on one engine.
Okay, 100 miles out. Everybody's trying to get the skis off the boat, and this is serious.
When the first ski hit the water, Skinny went out for a closer look.
When I first pulled up, there was like, I'd say 100 seals out there. I think you're the only people out there. And there's like, nah, you're the newcomers. The locals don't even want you around here. Get out of here. And then the set came, and that really tripped me out. I'm like, oh my God.
So we knew then, we had some perspective that it was pretty darn big.
That was a shocker for me. I'm like, God, I'm 100 miles out to sea on a jet ski. It's like, I'm watching these waves. Let's do this.
There are very few surfers in the world who have the mindset or the ability to go out and surf waves of this size and a break completely unknown. Peter Mell caught the first wave, and John Walla, the young boat captain who paddled out for a closer look, realized he'd made a serious mistake.
You really have to make it. You don't want to fall.
The young captain survived and made it back to the boat, which was lucky for everybody. After all, who'd drive us home?
Perfect day stands over me like a mountain in the sea, falling like an avalanche.
You're riding a mountain in the middle of the ocean and there's nothing in front of you. And as soon as you stop and you get off your board, like, you want to get on that ski so fast because it's like so much stuff out there. You guarantee there's some big fish out there that'd love to eat you.
Cortez is teeming with life. With all the seals, it's a snack stand for white sharks. But when you're this excited, nothing exists except the wave.
All around the reef, there's water breaking, and so it just seems like there's shore around. So you don't really realize until you sit down, like, you know, during a lull or something, and you look at your buddy and you go, we're out at 100 miles at sea. It's perfect. High five each other, you know? That's the only time you really do. It's pretty cool.
Those guys actually got, you know, the biggest wave because it was their turn. It was just the luck of the draw. Like, oh, I'm watching them get this thing. Like, oh my God, such a killer wave.
Whew. Swell's starting to pick up. I'm like, turn around. I'm like, you want this one? And he's like,
I remember going through my mind going, you know, don't be a wuss.
Forever. I just kept going and kept going and kept going and kept going. I just kept, because it was the biggest wave I ever had in my life. And he was just, whoo, and I'm like, well, get back on. Here's another one. And just right back out there, wham, put him into another one.
Taking a break for lunch, they talked very little while the waves kept pouring through.
We went out there thinking, okay, half hour, an hour sesh, we'll be able to get in, and then a wind will blow and ruin it. No, it just got glassier. And we're looking at each other like, oh my God, was there an oil spill around here? Are you kidding me? And we just ended up surfing all day long, have lunch, go suit up, back out.
The wind completely stopped. The ocean and sky merged. And it seemed that the waves knew the game. They'd come to play with giants.
So when we were leaving, it was still glassy. Sun's going down. It's all pink. We're watching the waves stand up, offshore blow off it like a giant stallion running in the middle of the ocean. I'm like, oh my God, was that for real? Still like kicking yourself, pinching yourself.
And then that ride home, when we were just sitting there with the four of us, looking at each other, just glowing. You know, you don't even have to say anything to each other. You just kind of look at each other and just smile. And go, yeah, this is it. This is how good I feel. This is what it's all about.
It was the end of a fantastic adventure. But I realized the perfect wave isn't one thing. It's always changing, depending on the surfer and the situation. It's a choice. It's what you make of it.
Life, oh life, life is a miracle.
Surfing is great while it's happening, but boy, you can talk about it forever and ever. And in a way, you know, the stories are all intertwined.
Every time a mother gives birth, tell me who can say.
Whether it be oil tank surfing or the guy surfing every day of his life or us on the outer reefs, it just carries on, and it's just a love and a laughter. It just goes on and on, and it's to the grave.
And it is so pure and so intense that we hang all this crap and bullshit on surfing, and it survives it all, because the ride itself is so bitchin'.
That grows into a tree. The starry galaxies remain a mystery. Oceans and the seas, the air we breathe. God knows that I believe. Life is a miracle. Life, oh life. Life is a miracle. Oh life.
It's the moments, the people, and the passion. There's something to be said for being stoked. I guess the bottom line is, real surfers don't say do.
The difference between surfing on the ocean and surfing on the Great Lake, there are some geologic differences,
and so it's important for me to know. I don't know, but yeah.
You love it?
Love it.
Perfect. Hey, Dana. Fire away, baby. You're an animal.
Can we start with something easier?
Quiet, please, rolling. Let's open the door.
Let's cut the camera crew, 5 second mini break.
Distraction.
Damn, bro.
Focus.
We're talking about surfing right now.
To me, that is surfing.
A different time.
My name.
Well, an Irishman would say, oh, geez, it looks good out there today. You're going to get out and get a couple of waves. It looks pretty great. And the Scottish guy would say, oh, great. Look at that. I can't believe it. Are you doing surfing or not? Yeah.
I'm getting more in touch with my feminine side, but now I'm able to deal with it.
This is an exact replica of my father shrunken down into a blonde hair. Kids like this, they like to throw these around in their bathtubs and stuff. I've caught my dad actually playing with this in the bathtub as well. He enjoys it.
I mean, I like being around him. I like playing golf with him. I like surfing with him. I like talking to him on the phone when the phone rings.
Sam, I'll be there in a minute. You know, dinner's ready. You're welcome. You know.
Yeah, hey guys, it's 3 o'clock. The Packers are playing. We got to get out of here. We can't stick around.
It's a wrap.
See ya. Cut.